You're participating in a very important event. You're preparing for a sacrament. You're preparing for something sacred, a special covenant relationship, preparing for marriage in the church. This is not mundane. This is not secular. You're preparing for a sacrament. It's different. During this year's Lenten readings, all first Sunday of Lent, second, third, fourth, here we are on the fifth, the church has been listening in the gospel to a survey of Old Testament readings on covenant. And it starts out with the covenant with Noah, and then Abraham, and down through Moses, and then pointing toward this in the gospel and in Jeremiah to the covenant with Jesus. We hear from the first reading, the prophet Jeremiah, he's telling about this covenant that's coming. He says, "The days are coming, says the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah." This is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel. I will place my law within them and write it upon their hearts. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. This has been called the covenant formula by the scholars of the church, and the way we thought about it for 2,000 years, some scholars believe that this formula is modeled after the ancient Israelite rite of marriage, the way they understood marriage. And the way that they said it was, "I will be your husband, and you shall be my wife. I will be your God, and you will be my people." On, "I will be your husband, and you shall be my wife." You hear the covenant? He doesn't want just any relationship with us. He wants a covenant marriage with us. He's proposing marriage. This is a proposal of marriage from God to his people. But we don't hear this the same way that the ancients heard it. When they heard it very differently from the way we heard it. They didn't have pen and ink. They didn't have Xerox machines and printers. When the ancients heard this, "I will write it upon your hearts," think what they had for writing, how they understood writing. You engrave stone, clay, wax. Only the wealthiest had papyrus and ink. Writing was engraving. "I will engrave it upon their hearts." That's a very different relationship than just, "I'm going to send you a letter," or "I'm going to write the letter and a love letter in your heart." This one can't be erased. It's engraved. I want to look at this whole concept of covenant relationship from a different point of view. I want to talk about a word that we use all the time, love. In the English language, we typically only have one word for it. And the same thing with Spanish, amor. And so just one word for it. But if you go back and look at other languages, and particularly ancient Greek, which is a much older language, it was in use for 1,500 plus years by the time that we started speaking proper English, and modern Spanish evolved. But I want to teach you some words. I'm going to teach you some Greek words. I'm going to teach you three words. The Greeks had three words for the same, for what we say in love. So they had eros. They had philios. And they had agape. You've probably heard these words. It's used a lot in church theology and in church thinking and so forth. But I want to pull it out of theology and bring it down to human development. I want to show you how the Greeks probably understood it. In this way, it's think about eros. Now, our language and culture has taken the word and used it in a very cheap, mundane way, like erotic, right? Triple X, that kind of stuff. But the way they understood it, think about human development. Think about the newly conceived child. And one of the first things that they develop is, who am I? What am I? And one of the first things that physically develops is nerves and senses. And the nerves are concentrated in fingertips, mouth, genitals. And today with modern sonograms, we know that infants masturbate in the womb. It's the most natural thing in the world. The most basic question that child begins to ask early on, and we continue it. And in every single stage, you'll experience this question is, who am I? What am I? And in the beginning, it's just me, 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 me. I'm the center of my universe. Eros. I'm the center of my universe. It's all about me. Eros. Now, we never lose Eros, but we develop something else. Pretty soon, the baby is aware of its mother's heartbeats, and then the baby is born, and it becomes, there's a new concept, and it's not I'm the center of my universe, it's not an I, there's a we. There's a we. Mama, breast, eat. Then another face, daddy, maybe children, other family, and the number of we gets bigger and bigger. And we become the center of our universe. I'm the center of my universe. We are the center of our universe. Do you see how that works? Human development. The Greeks even named cities after this. Philadelphia. There's a whole bunch of cities around the world called Philadelphia. Particularly if you go through the Middle East and see how some of the early Greek cities. The understanding of the city of brotherly love. The city of we. That's ancient Greek. Now, there's this other word, agape. And the Greeks understood this, and the early church took it in and understood it from a theological point of view. You even hear it in the Gospel of John, when Jesus and Peter are around a fire after the resurrection, and Jesus says to Peter, he says, Peter, do you love me? And Peter says, you know I love you. And he says, again, Peter, do you love me? He says, you know I love you. And then the third time he says, Peter, do you love me? And he's just frustrated. He says, you know I love you. That conversation did not happen. Let's go back and understand how the Greeks heard that conversation and how John wrote. So they're on the beach. Jesus has a fire there. He's had breakfast with the apostles. It's after the resurrection. He's already died and risen. And now he's just he and Peter sitting around the fire. And he says to Peter, if you read the original Greek, Jesus says to Peter, Peter, do you philios me? No, excuse me, I was wrong. He says, Peter, do you agape me? He's inviting him here. Peter has just denied Jesus, turned his back on him, ran away from him, after promising that he would always be faithful to him. He is suffering because he knew he betrayed him. So Jesus is saying, do you agape me? What's he saying? Let's go deeper in the word agape. So in human development, think about, I'm the center of my universe. We are the center of our universe. You are the center of my universe. So think about agape as you are the center of my universe. How do we experience in human existence? Well, look at a mother and her child. Or if you, men, when you see your first child born, you will be changed in a way that you can never, ever go back and be the same. I will do anything for this child. Anything. We hear stories of agape played out. Like, for instance, a child runs across the street, a bus is coming down on him, and mama runs out, throws herself in front of the bus, and pushes the child out of the way. Where does that come from? You are the center of my universe. Or we hear war stories. We even heard this in the Middle Eastern wars times. So you get a bunch of guys, they're trained together as soldiers. They're close as you can possibly imagine, a bunch of guys, and they're now in a tight battle, and some of them are concentrated in a small space, and a grenade lands in the middle of them. We've been hearing these stories ever since the invention of grenades. And all of a sudden, somebody jumps on the grenade and absorbs the blast. They die. That's not philios. It's not eros. It's you are the center of my universe. I will give my life for you. Jesus has just given his life for the world. Agape. Let's go back and hear the conversation. So Jesus says to Peter, Peter, do you agape me? And Peter is suffering big time. Shame. I don't know who I am. I thought I was different. I betrayed my best friend. Lord, you know I philios you. You hear how that sounds? He invited him to agape. He responded with philios. So the second time, Jesus says to Peter, Peter, do you agape me? Oh, that's like putting a stake in the heart. Remember, Peter denied Jesus. He denied him three times, right? So now the third question comes, and Jesus says the third time, he doesn't say agape. If you look at the Greek, at the Greek translation, say Pope Benedict wrote about this. And he says to Peter, he says, Peter, do you philios me? Think about what he did. He met Peter where he was. Peter was hurting. He affirmed Peter. He met him where it was. The demand in that moment was not to agape. We know that Peter continued to grow. He continued to develop spiritually. We know how he died. We know the witness he gave to Jesus. He moved from we are the center of our universe to you, Lord, are the center of my universe. You see how that works? Three words for love that have a whole lot of different meaning. Now let's go back and look at what's going to happen. You never lose eros. You never lose philios. You have to grow into agape. Now, I told you I was married. I can absolutely stand here and guarantee you that I entered into marriage with a healthy dose of eros. And grew into philios with her. Saw our children born. Lived 37 years before she moved on. And we both developed into agape, never losing any of the other parts of our human development, but growing into covenant relationship, the way God understands covenant. Now, I share that with you to be able to share with you my journey to priesthood. Cynthia died. And I did what I was trained as a permanent deacon to do in those counseling sessions, is to counsel people, don't do anything but grieve. Don't change anything. You just got the biggest trauma you could possibly imagine, losing a spouse. Don't do anything for a year. Don't sell the house. Don't get a girlfriend. Don't change the color of your socks. In other words, give yourself permission to hurt. Give yourself time to grieve. It's a very important time. So I did that. And I know people who've had the experience and didn't do it, and they paid a price. It's healthy to treat it that sacredly. That relationship is so special. But then, after the year was up, I had already begun to discern priesthood. Along the way, I had experienced everything you can possibly imagine. Oh, I need another woman. No, I don't need another woman. But I have this big hole. I have this big pain. I don't know how to fill the hole. What did I need? Well, you go back and look at the Greeks. I didn't need eros. Our six children were grown and they had families. I had plenty of philios and friends and community. I didn't need philios. What I needed was, in 37 years of marriage, I had grown into agape. You are the center of my universe. I couldn't go back to, and I tried, I am the center of my universe. That shoe didn't fit. I wasn't satisfied with we are the center of my universe. I would never be whole again if I couldn't come to you are the center of my universe. And since I was ordained a priest, I found that to be absolutely true as priest and pastor. That I was able to discover that marriage is not that different from priesthood. Priesthood, properly lived out, is the way the Greeks understood it. You are the center of my universe, and I'm incomplete without you. Just as you will discover in your marriage, you are incomplete without her or him. That's the way God intended it. So when God is proposing a covenant relationship with us, he's proposing a wholeness for us, that we become whole. And the gift of marriage that he gave to us from the very beginning as a sacrament is like a foretelling of that. It's a way to live it day to day. Now, I will tell you this. Marriage and priesthood are daily decisions. They're choices, just like faith. Faith is a choice. You choose it. You decide it. You choose your faith. You choose to be married daily, sometimes hourly. But you choose. It's a choice. Sometimes it doesn't make any sense. But you choose it. It's a covenant. Priesthood, sometimes hourly. But it's a choice. As you approach the most sacred day of your holy matrimony, think about where you are in your human development. Are you the center of your universe? Are we the center of our universe? Or are you the center of my universe? And don't get impatient with it. It can take years to develop. But at least you have a roadmap. And the Greeks understood the roadmap. The Greeks understood covenant. They understood human development, and their language reflected what they understood.